They'll have to steal away and get some chili.
I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. We don't have a quorum. We have some members excused. But we do have continuation of the Mindot budget. We don't have a quorum. We're just one shy of a quorum. We may have a quorum. And actually, I've asked, in essence, a time, unless there's some particular question by the members of the committee, they are just going to review basically the changes rather than going through every item. So that would be great if they can do that. And we do have a quorum. And before we start, Representative Morgan, would you move the minutes?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes of Tuesday, February 27.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Representative Morgan moved the minutes of February 27th. Any corrections or additions? Yeah, we got some people over here. If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved as read. Mr. Gray, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a continuation of our budget presentation from Tuesday. And on Tuesday, we covered just a general overview of the governor's recommendations and their fiscal impacts, as well as a detailed conversation on the state roads operations and maintenance program. I'm going to refer you to page one in your table of contents, essentially, in your budget books. And we are going to use the budget books as the basis for our discussion for the balance of today. Consistent with our conversation with the chair, we intend to I will cover most of the programs, but where there are change orders or something of significance that is different than the prior biennium or the current biennium, the individual program areas will be available to talk to that. First, I'm going to give you a brief weather report, however, because a number of people have been asking in that regard. As of 1 o'clock this afternoon, six counties were closed. State offices were closed in six counties in the southwest area. That was expanded to approximately 16 or 17 counties as of 2 o'clock this afternoon. Those counties are primarily on the line south of the Minnesota River, south and west. So Lyon, Faribault, Yellow Medicine, out towards the South Dakota border. They're continuing. I-90 has been closed by our offices with the State Patrol, effective early this afternoon from Albert Lea westbound. In addition, Iowa has closed 35 I-35, so we have closed I-35 from Albert Lea south to the Iowa border, not because of weather conditions in our case, but because there's nowhere to feed into. They'd get stranded beyond Albert Lea. So there's a lot going on. We just received a report that Stearns and Benton counties have pulled their local road crews off. We have not done so as of yet, but throughout the state, there seem to be real pockets of concentrated winds in addition to the snow. And as we all know as Minnesotans, sometimes the wind is more damaging than even the amount of snow. And we are receiving pockets of heavy snow, primarily in the southwest. And then anecdotally, we've received a message from our District 1 engineer, Mike Robinson, who informs us that their weather information system data up north is that they expect another 12 to 18 inches of snow tonight and sustained winds at the 35 to 40 mile hour range. And he will be proposing some closures there. Of course, the governor's office, with the point person being Commissioner Anderson of Dewar, makes those determinations for any state office closures. And we'll be in discussions with them late this evening. And then we're collecting weather condition data throughout the state, and we'll have conference calls as early as 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. I don't say this to alarm anybody. And in the metro area, technically we're grading this. Weather conditions is fair. The good news is that we're at or above freezing. The chemicals, even this evening, should be very effective. It's a matter of trying to gauge the wind and the volume of the snow. So it's a wait-and-see attitude for most folks, and but I just thought you might appreciate a little bit of that background and that there's a lot of diligence being put into this effort, including with the State Patrol and obviously at the governor's office level as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gray.
Now, if somebody could speak to Speaker Kelleher, we'd be in good shape, right?
Right.
Okay, that was off tape. Kidding aside now, moving into our budget activity, aeronautics is our first budget activity. If you turn to page 15, Ray is going to talk you very briefly through the aeronautics program, and they do have a change item proposed by the Lieutenant Governor that's an infusion of one-time spending for additional capital investments. And I'll turn it over to Ray Rott, our Director of the Office of Aeronautics.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be back again. I think this is my 10th or 11th time with the budget process, and I think you've been involved in all of them, Mr. Chairman. So I will move rather fast through here. I do have a handout, if it doesn't show in, within the document, but it indicates where the airports are in the state, so you can determine what airports are related to your.
For the members of the committee, we dismissed or let the pages go because they had a little distance to go, and Susie's taking care of the page work.
Getting promotion?
She got a promotion, right.
Well, thanks, Susie.
One thing I'd just like to point out, not going into any detail in the first few pages here, that do give an outline of what our office does. Just recently, the FAA issued their forecast for growth in aviation with about a 5% growth per year. So we're using that as our basis for what we're going to need to be doing into this biennium and beyond. One thing that I'd like to point out that as far as statistics goes that we're rather proud of, in 2005 there was only 5 fatalities in the state in aviation.
There it is.
And last year there was only 3. So we, although we can't take complete credit for that, we do have a safety program that goes out and works with the pilots and tries to keep them as informed as possible on safety activities and how to primarily not get into weather situations, because that's kind of, as we can see today, that's where most of our accidents happen, are really weather related. On page 18 is a summary of the funding. The changes in there, you'll see in the governor's recommendation, $6 million each year. And this $6 million, $12 million total, is coming from the fact that the $15 million that was loaned to the general fund back in 2003 will be coming back into the state airports fund on July 1st. The question had come up in other meetings where the other $3 million is. Mr. Chairman, just to let you know, our revenues are only about $1,200,000 less than what our normal spending is. So this $3 million will take us into the next biennium, and so we can stay solvent into the next biennium. Currently, it'll just go back into the state airports fund, and we'll be collecting interest for that two-year period. But we do plan to use it. We do have a plan to use it, and it will go into our airports. The $6 million, just to let you know, the capital improvement programs for the airports, so we just got those in January. There's a request for over $85 million in federal funds and $18 million in state funds for just airport construction. With the $6 million added to the normal $8 million that we have that goes into airport construction is about $14 million, and we won't quite meet their $18 million that they're requesting, but then there is fallout based on local share of projects and that sort of thing. So we're going to make use of that money this year, these next 2 years in the biennium, and then we will be making use of the other $3 million as we go into the next biennium, the 10 and 11 biennium. So the only other change in here is the amount of change that's been added for salary increases, cost of living, and so on. Other than that, we'll be doing our program as usual from our base level.
Actually, Mr. Rod, actually, for the members, you're aware that the salary increases, and that's always shown under compensation adjustment.
On page 18, and that's like $66,000 in 1 year and $140,000 in the other, I believe. $134,000 in the other year.
Does that complete your testimony, Mr. Rye?
That's the quick of it. If you have questions, I certainly will answer any questions that you may have.
Are there questions from any members of the committee? Not. Thank you very much. Representative Hortman.
And I don't know if you want us to try to keep this hearing really short, so I can ask fewer questions if you want me to. But if just looking at the summary page, page 5 of the budget book, in this section where it shows the state airports and the percent biennial change is listed as 31.4%, but it sounds like that's because of the repayment of this money from the general fund. Is that right?
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I understood.
That took care of it. Yeah. Thank you. Any further questions? Not again. Thank you, Mr. Rott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and members, the next budget activity in our multimodal system program area is the transit office, and that is on page 20 as a description of the program. There are no change requests directly associated with the transit office. However, I'd like to highlight just a couple of things and explain a revenue change that's driven by the MVES amendment. The Greater Minnesota Transit is the public trans participation program. It's supported by the general fund, a direct appropriation of approximately $18 million a year, and in addition, it is supported by revenues from the MVEST amendment, which will go into a dedicated Greater Minnesota Transit or Minnesota Transit Fund. Over and above that, the governor's also identified the sales tax on leased vehicles. The that share in a 2% 60-40 split with the 38 going to Metropolitan Transit and 2% going to Greater Minnesota Transit will also be part of this Minnesota Transit Fund. So the numbers are a little bit different, but in basic terms, there are no change orders, and the anticipation is that these revenues from the general fund, the MVES amendment, and the sales tax on leased vehicles will allow us to sustain our current level of service, which is approximately 980,000 hours of service throughout the 80 counties of Minnesota, of which 66 have county service for Greater Minnesota Transit. In addition, this office also heads up our bicycle and pedestrian systems planning efforts and promotes non-travel alternatives and other key programs of that nature.
We have a question. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize to members of the committee because I know I may be a broken record on rural transit at this point, but if we could look at page 23, if you could explain to me, Mr. Gray, when I look at Greater Minnesota Transit under expenditures by fund, I see we go from $7 million plus in each year of this biennium to zero. On page 23, I'm about two-thirds of the way down the columns. I was wondering if you could explain the move from $7 million in each year to zero.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Here, I've got it now. Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative, the Greater Minnesota Transit Fund is the existing fund in which MVEST revenues are deposited and is available for spending on our transit with our transit operators. If you go two lines below that, there is a title called Transit Assistance, which is zero in this current biennium and becomes in 8 and 9, $8.5 million and $9.5 million. That is a name change, and it reflects the MVEST amendment and the sales tax on leased vehicles. That's the portion that will go to Greater Minnesota Transit. So in total, there is an increase in state funding participation being directed to the Greater Minnesota Transit program. So that is the issue there, that the current biennium is called the Greater Minnesota Transit Fund, and with the new biennium, it will be called the Transit Assistance Fund. So it would have been better if we had been able to align those, but technically they're different names, so we can do that for the budget purposes.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gray. You mentioned the 38-2 split on the NVEST, and I wonder if that's an assumption you're making in terms of legislative action, or is that actually a MnDOT or administration position?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, that's an administrative position, okay. The administration's position.
Okay. Thank you.
It's in the budget item that way, too, Representative Hornstein.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick observation that the continued base funding of $18,810,000, very much appreciated at least staying where it is between 2006 and 2009, but just adding in the 2.1%, the most conservative inflationary factor, we are short in terms of our buying power, $1,630,000 and change between 2006 and 2009. That's a significant number over the three-year change from 2006 to fiscal year 2009.
Representative Kalin, you're talking about the total budget, not this particular transfer.
No, I'm actually talking about the current appropriation from the general fund. $18,810,000 in 2006.
I thought I heard you saying big numbers. That's what I was wondering.
$1,630,000 that's not going to Representative Morrow's community and, frankly, to mine as well. Mm-hmm. So just the decline of the purchasing power, of course. And I know that that's not it's for someone else to handle the big picture, but just it's helpful to see that we're buying less.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, it's an excellent observation. It's a great concern to our transit program office headed by Donna Allen. But just as a comment in that regard, we look at funding our transit operators and transit program from two sources. One is the general fund direct appropriation, which you just highlighted, the $18.8 million, that we're able to sustain that level, and that's the good news. But I also want to call attention that a significant consideration of the office and the governor's budget is that the transit assistance program, particularly with the addition of the sales tax on leased vehicles, increases the MVEST contribution from $7.5 million that we talked about just briefly to $8.5 million in 2008 and $9.5 million in 2009, which is a collective increase of approximately $3 million. Which is exactly to address those sorts of issues. So the good news is that we're able to sustain our level of service based on this forecast, but we're not adding service or expanding. But I think we do account for some of that inflationary or purchasing power impact, as you noted.
Yeah, Representative Kalin.
Yeah, to that point, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Gray. I assume that we're going to see a similar pattern in other areas of the budget. I think I've seen it, that the MVEST dedication is really buying us inflation and something very close to it. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I think that at times that's the case. At times it's helping us to sustain our current level of service. So it's I'll try and point that out as we go along throughout the process. And if I neglect to do so, give me a wave and I'll get back to it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was looking at the dedication of the vehicle leasing sales tax. It looks like that revenue is divided between a lot of different places, and so just a portion of the new vehicle leasing sales tax will go to that transit assistance fund, and then other pieces of that revenue source will go to other places.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, that's correct. The portion that of the sales tax and leasing that will benefit Greater Minnesota Transit is approximately $740,000 in fiscal 08 and about $814,000 in fiscal 09. That is on page 68 of your book. There's quite a comprehensive overview of the dedication of MVEST revenues to transportation in total, including tacking on the sales tax and leasing as part of that MVEST. So at some point in time, I'd be willing to talk to the committee about that, but just for reference purposes, it's really a pretty good page of understanding the phase-in, the 60-40 split, the 40% being split 38 and 2%, and then kind of showing what the dollar impact is to the various programs and transit of this change.
Representative Hortman.
I did want to ask, why create this new fund called the Transit Assistance Fund? Why not just put the money into the Greater Minnesota Transit Fund?
Mr. Chair, I think that was a Department of Finance call. I think that partly because we did not have a constitutionally dedicated purpose to the fund before, this clarifies it as a constitutionally dedicated fund, which it is not currently. And it's a technical call by the Department of Finance, so I think I'd leave it at that. But I think the fact that it's constitutionally dedicated, having a different fund name that's consistent with the constitutional amendment and the character of being constitutional versus statutory is an important distinction for the Department of Finance.
Thank you.
Matt, was that the question you were going to talk about? You mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, thank you.
Mr. Chair, and again, not to understate any of the programs and their significance, but our next section is on page 24 is the freight office that is headed up by Cecil Selnis, who is also available today. And I want to compliment all the MnDOT program and area directors for being here. It was tempting to go home about 4 hours ago. So, but we were waiting with bated breath to have this opportunity to talk with you this evening. As I'm sure you were waiting with bated breath to talk to us.
Yeah.
But that aside, the freight office is a very significant arena for us, and freight traffic and movement is a significant focus area for us. It includes not only freight and system-wide planning, but rail and port programs, as well as credentialing and the motor carrier oversight. So it's a significant program. However, the governor's budget has no change requests and merely reflects that we are going to continue our base funding for this office, which is now housed, as opposed to Mendota Heights, is housed on the first floor of the central office building right across the street. So if you want to talk about freight or commercial vehicles, you can do that across the street currently. So they just moved in this summer. With that, I'd like to move to the state road construction program, which is on page...
Mr. Gray, just in the event, does someone have a question on the freight or railroad? Not fine. That may proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, the next program, we're back into our state roads program, and I'm going to direct you to page 30 and walk you through the program. Actually, I'm going to start on page, we'll go with page 30. And there are essentially four significant change order items that we are addressing in the state roads construction program. And first let me tell you that the state roads infrastructure investment and planning consists of two significant parts to MnDOT's budget. First and foremost, at least in terms of visibility, is it includes our state road construction program. And we're going to get to some of those issues very quickly. That is has a base funding of approximately $550 million a year, which the governor's proposal has a couple of key recommendations on that front. First of all, on page 30, and we talked about this at length on Tuesday, we're proposing to shift from the state road construction program to our operations and maintenance arenas, primarily $13 million. And that's a straightforward reallocation. While it has no fund balance impact, it is helping to promote some of our operations maintenance activities around smooth roads and clear roads and the like, as well as some internal workforce initiatives. And this was driven by our budget process as a priority that we needed to invest more in operations and maintenance. And after exhausting all of our other avenues for that, we concluded this was the appropriate realignment. So our base budget for state roads construction has declined from $551 to $538 million. On page 32, I just wanted to highlight that this is the actual description of the state roads program. And in the middle of the page, it notes services provided. I've mentioned these, but the SRC is the state road construction program is the biggest piece. It's labeled as state roads investment. The other areas talk about the inception, the planning, design, construction, and contract administration of our construction program. those activities, personnel and related costs, are funded in this program as well. Finally, the other item that is included in this overall budget appropriation is any trunk highway bond debt service related to construction projects. I'm going to move to page 34 and try and make this a quick overview of our change items from our current base forecast. If you look in on the upper third of the page under Governor's Recommendations on page 34, the first one is the state road construction realignment. Rather than paging through the book, I'll just talk to this. I just mentioned that this is a shift to put more funding towards operations and maintenance activities. The next line item is trunk highway funding and bonding. This is essentially two elements. It includes, in 2008, the $100 million general fund transfer that the governor has recommended primarily for increased construction activities with a commitment to keep the Devil's Triangle project on track as part of that $100 million of funding. $5 million of that $100 million is intended for a mileage-based tax study that we've discussed at some length on Tuesday. In addition, for the biennium, there is approximately $12.4 million, $985,000 in 2008, and all of the $11.4 million in 2009 is related to debt service on the governor's $1.7 billion 10-year construction bonding program initiative. I believe that we are looking at approximately $100 million of bond authorization for 2008, increasing to $150 million in 2009 and 10, and then up to as high as $200 million a year in the out years through the end of the 10 years. So this trunk highway funding and bonding is essentially the general fund transfer to our state road construction program and debt service related to the governor's bonding program. The next line item, state road construction timing change, $77 million reduction in 2008 and a $77 million increase in 2009. Obviously, that's a kind of a zero-sum game, but what it really reflects is that in 2008, we have hit that cliff that we talked about, because 2004 through 7 and actually earlier, we were making increasing use of federal advanced construction financing or borrowing. We are in a huge payback year in 2008. That impacts our ability to fund construction that year. However, after catching our breath, we are able to move into 2009 and increase the program by a like amount. So for the biennium, the net impact is zero, but it's a kind of a real in-your-face realization that we have to pay back this advanced borrowing and maintain levels at a reasonable amount.
Representative Nelson?
I guess the question that brings to mind is that in 2008, is this going to cause us to lose a construction season or have no projects out there? That I guess I'm looking at the construction companies that are domiciled in Minnesota. Are they going to have to go elsewhere and because they're at that $77 million deficit that we're going to have, they're not going to have jobs to do here. They're going to therefore not have people employed here.
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's a good question, and it's not an easy answer per se, but overall the answer is likely no. And I say that from this perspective, that we have a tremendous amount of construction activity going on currently. On some of the biggest projects, many of the projects, are multiple-year projects. So we have had the three highest years of construction activity in the state's history in these past 3 years. That's going to continue into a number of those projects will continue into that year. I think that it does slow us down in issuing new lettings a bit. I think that, too, that the governor's program, the bonding program for $1.7 million, is also a definite infusion. The other offset that's very significant here, and that I say if you look at the whole picture, is the $100 million transfer from general fund. That is more than the $77 million reduction. So from our perspective and the governor's perspective, we think we're going to be able to sustain a high level of transportation investment and contract opportunities for our folks.
Thank you.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to talk to the Trunk Highway Fund sales tax impact, and it's a relatively modest, but it's technically a change item that filters throughout our budget. Wherever we've made expenditures where we had to pay sales tax, we have reduced our appropriation by that amount, which means we don't have to pay the sales tax. And so it's actually, while it's a negative there in spending authority, it's spending we don't need, which is a positive for the Trunk Highway Fund. So that's why that change item is there. And then throughout the budget, all of the programs have received a 2% compensation adjustment. And for the personnel that staff the planning, design, and construction and inspection and administration of our projects, that impact is $2.7 million in 2008 and approximately $5.5 million in 2009. The $5.5 million becomes a base adjustment for this program to support our personnel costs related to this program going forward. Mr. Chair, if there aren't any questions, I'd like to go to the next program activity in State Roads, and that is electronic communications. And I'm going to ask Andy Terry of our Office of Electronic Communications to come and talk about this, because there are there is a significant change item there, at least in terms of concept, and he'll address that briefly. And I think you can turn to page 47 in your budget book as you prepare for him to come up.
Excuse me, Mr. Gray. Representative Morrow?
Mr. Gray, just before you leave, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. I wanted to check that I actually had a basis to ask you the question before I asked. And it's about freight, and I don't know that you need to turn back. But as we've been talking throughout the session about renewable energy, agricultural production, ethanol, and the like, it seems like some of our rail lines are going to need some upgrading and work on them. Do I understand you correctly that the budget for the governor's budget has flatlined funding on rail?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrell, it has flatlined our operating budget and statutory ability to spend, but there is a separate program related to grants and loans to our short line rail systems, if you will, and I think that while there has been no additional infusion of monies proposed for that program this year, there is capacity and loans available for that. I'm looking to see if Mr. Selness saw his section went by and hit the road.
I apologize.
But we can follow up with you on that. But there is separately, there is a loan fund called our Mercy Program or our Service Improvement Program, Minnesota Rail Service Improvement right. Program, that has monies available and projects are seeking that funding currently in the form of either grants or loans. And, of course, as a loan program, it continues to we receive monies in, so there's new monies to reinvest every year, and I think that that will be something that will be a resource and probably a driving influence on some of our short-line railroads as they look for grant and loan monies to handle that workload.
And I suppose I'm encouraging expanding that loan program to ensure these projects get done.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrell, I sense that from your question, and this point is noted. And separately, I think we'll have Mr. Selness come and talk to you just even for 10 minutes to follow up on that. Excuse me. My finance directors point out that this is an operating budget review, too, and that additional funding for that is typically covered in our capital bonding year every time. So there were additional monies, I believe, maybe directed even last year, but it will be covered also next year. But it's worth talking about what the capacity is right now. With that, I'm going to turn, Mr. Chair, with your permission, over to Mr. Andy Terry to talk about the Metro Radio System change item. And we're on page 47 of your budget book.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Carey?
That's correct. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andy Terry. I'm the director of MnDOT's Office of Electronic Communications. I'm going to speak very briefly on, actually off of page 44, a little bit about the budget narrative just to give you an overview of what my office is about. On Tuesday of this week, when Bob Winter, director of the division that is responsible for operations and maintenance for the organization, talked a little bit about state road operations. He mentioned a lot of the technology that's being implemented to improve the way we provide safety and mobility to the public, things like bridge de-icing systems being installed, things like transportation operation communication centers for logistical operations of our fleet, things like road weather information systems on days like today that are very effective at us being able to diagnose weather conditions, things coming in the future like global positioning systems and automatic vehicle location. So those technologies need people that are able to operate and maintain and install those systems, and that's much of the work of this activity, Electronic Communications Office. On page 44, I'll just overview for you a little bit that we design, maintain local, regional, and statewide communication networks, the freeway management system, our mobile fleet radios and base station equipment. One of the major activities of this function is to oversee the development, procurement, installation, acceptance, the ongoing operation and maintenance of the ARMOR system, and I'm sure you've heard that acronym before. That's the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response, which is basically the state's effort to renew and upgrade its shared public safety communication systems, which MnDOT is a partner with the Department of Public Safety and a lead in the state in deploying that infrastructure. In addition to the Department of Transportation, this activity, electronic communications, serves not only the Department of Public Safety, but the Department of Natural Resources, other state and local agencies upon request, and I think it's important to note that this activity is reimbursed for those costs of services we provide to other agencies, and approximately 30% of our activity budget does get reimbursed back into the Trunk Highway Fund for those services. In addition to state agencies, now we're moving into an era where we're providing services to more local units of government as well. And through our involvement with the ARMOR program, we serve 25,000 public safety professionals in the 9-county metro area, and that is expanding into the Rochester and St. Cloud districts with funding that was provided in last session, and there is currently an initiative championed by the Department of Public Safety to move that initiative statewide. Now I will refer specifically to the change level initiative that is identified on page 48 in your book. A little bit of background on this change initiative. As I mentioned in my earlier remarks, communication systems used by state and local governments are in a time of transition and renewal. We're migrating from standalone single-agency systems to shared multi-agency networks. We're migrating from 30-year-old technology to current digital software-driven technologies, and MnDOT, by statute and through our agreements with Department of Public Safety and others, is responsible to own, operate, and maintain that system. Office of Electronic Communications works closely with Department of Public Safety, the Statewide Radio Board, and system owners to make modifications, additions, and repair of those systems. To conclude my remarks on this change level, MnDOT has taken on significant additional ownership and maintenance responsibilities. This proposal reduces spending from the Trunk Highway Fund for operating the backbone and operations and maintenance costs incurred by MnDOT and replaces that with funds from the 911 special revenue account. Because of the nature of this shared system, it's more appropriate, felt that, and the administration feels, for those funds to come directly from the 911 revenue source than the Trunk Highway Fund. So this is, as was mentioned by Mr. Gray, of some of the other change initiatives, this is a no-cost, a zero-sum game, but it basically provides funding from the 911 revenue fund rather than the Trunk Highway Fund for the services that we provide.
Mr. Carey, does some of that come from, do you get any additional money from the feds and that security monies?
Mr. Chair and members, there has been over the last several years significant amount of Homeland Security funding that has come to the ARMOR program. Most of that, almost all of that federal funding is 80%, 20% split, where 80% goes to local units of government and 20% is used for state resources. And that, again, through the Department of Public Safety, they administer that program. And there has been dollars both in the last three and four issuances of Homeland Security that have gone to the ARMOR program, both for state and local use. I wouldn't have those specific dollar amounts, but I could refer you to the Department of Public Safety.
But that wasn't all passed through. You retained some of that for public safety and MnDOT also, right?
A very small amount came to MnDOT for some planning and training.
No, I mean,
majority of it was through Department of Public Safety for actual equipment use.
Mr. Chair, just one additional point. Use of the 911 fund to support the maintenance efforts and services to keep the backbone up and running. In the metro area, this change order is reflected that we're paying for it out of the Trunk Highway Fund now. It's being shifted over. But for the expansion of the ARMOR system, those costs are part and parcel of the 911 fund. So there's an element of consistency as well as we move ahead. So Mr. Terry's office will continue to be the expert resource installer maintainer of the system statewide. And I believe the Rochester and St. Cloud districts, which are in the next phase of the expansion of this program, those are all services are funded through the 911 fund. So this makes for a consistency throughout the state.
I'm not that familiar with the 911. I know they had one. Are there separate funds in the 911? There's enhanced and something. Are some of those separate on the telephone bill? Are two separate items in there now? It doesn't pertain to this, but when you speak of 911, aren't they funded two or three different ways? Basically on your phone bill?
Yeah, I wouldn't know the specifics, advanced. But I know that the 911 fund that funds this program also does fund other programs like public safety answering points for local units of government and payment of the 911 fees that provide the call service into the dispatch center. So I know that it is divvied up into multiple different avenues, not just to fund this program.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you. Mr. Terry, I'm wondering about expansion of the 800 megahertz system statewide, given the current budget proposal. When might we expect that system to be a statewide system or close to it?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in the testimony that's been made by the Department of Public Safety and the program that we've worked with the Statewide Radio Board, we're estimating a 4 to 5 year deployment if we're successful in the governor's recommendation in this legislative session to get full funding for a statewide implementation.
Okay. That's your testimony, Mr. Carey?
It is, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, at this point in time, given the significance of the local roads program, I thought we would have Julie Skullman, our state aid engineer, come down to talk through the program. There aren't any change items, but it's just such a significant and pervasive part of our program and budget that we wanted to talk about that. Before she starts, in my haste to get through things here, I wanted to point out two other state road program change initiatives. They're on page 37 and 38 of your budget books. You probably don't even need to go there, but I did want to talk about the TRLF repayment. The TRLF repayment is our transportation revolving loan fund program. It's a unique program set up about 7-8 years ago for our state infrastructure bank. It was seeded with monies from the federal monies, state general fund monies, as well as trunk highway fund monies. And the idea there is that hopefully projects at the local level and for transportation projects throughout the state would come forward and be able to leverage some money to borrow that money and use that as a kind of a springboard for borrowing more money and replenish the fund. That has worked very successfully for transit and transportation, other transportation projects where federal and local funds and state funds have been used, state general funds have been used. We have not had that same success with the highway fund. Quite frankly, the constitutional limitations around trunk highway fund dollars, we had to keep that as a separate piece of the pie in our transportation, our TLF program. So this change request is merely to say let's bring that money back into the trunk highway fund since we can't change the character of it or leverage it and get any more bang for our buck anyway. And so that's merely acknowledging the element that's in the TRLF now that's trunk highway dollars only. It does not change the character or the foundation or the funding of the balance of the TRLF program.
Mr. Gray, wasn't there a cap on that and revolving loan fund?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The cap that you're referring to is still in place that we can transfer up to $15 million from the trunk highway fund into this program. We have not done so since an initial seeding of several years ago. And again, this $4.6 million is money that essentially for us to access it, we're the only ones that primarily could use it, and we'd be lending it to ourselves to pay it back to the fund. So it's kind of hasn't served its purpose, and it's we're now asking for appropriation authority to bring it back into the trunk highway fund, but we're leaving the remainder of the program, the TRLF program, intact, and it's a viable program that we're continuing to solicit projects and see some real benefits there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, I saw this TRLF fund when Deed was presenting its budget in the higher ed committee, and I asked them, why is the TRLF program administered through deed? I mean, I understand this is just the trunk highway money that you're putting back in, the trunk highway fund, but why isn't that whole program just run through MnDOT?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, a good question. The main reason for that is that there is a financing arm within DEED called the Public Financing Public Facilities Authority. And essentially they have the ability to issue identify and issue debt. And that is the way that projects coming forward are able to expand their borrowing. We put some seed money, and that seed money becomes, along with the local contributions, becomes an opportunity to raise more debt and to essentially get a bigger project out than it would have been than would have been otherwise possible. And so this Public Facilities Authority, of which the Department of Transportation, the Department of Finance, several other agencies, including DEED, under their broad guise of economic development, and this is really an economic and transportation development tool. DEED is the chairperson for this, the agency chair for this program. So we're part and parcel of a half a dozen agencies. DEED chairs the Public Facilities Authority, which is housed in their agency.
Representative Hortman.
And I hear you saying it works well. It's fine that it's over there. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. To me, it sounded like it was sort of another bureaucratic layer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, it's I think it is a layer, but it's there are reasons why the type of debt that the Department of Finance and the state can issue versus this independent financing arm within DEED. And there's an important distinction for the financial markets and from a constitutional perspective. So it works very well. They also do a lot of the clean water, wastewater treatment financing and bonding. They are the authority that also facilitates bonding for some of the Met Council purchases around capital purchase trucks or buses, rather, and other things. I've got trucks on my brain today as we try and get them out in the roads. But so that the Public Facilities Authority, in fact, does do a lot of financing for a number of agencies.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Skolnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to be here to talk about the local roads program. We don't have major changes, so I'm going to talk quickly. The state aid program has the county state aid system, which is 30,000 miles, that is managed by the 87 counties. I'm on page 50. And they get 29% of the highway user tax distribution fund. In addition to that, there's the municipal state aid system, which is about 3,000 miles, and that is managed by 142 cities, which have a population over 5,000. The money that goes to them is statutorily appropriated, and so I'm not proposing any changes there. But I did want to point out one item, and that is on page 55. The one thing that I come and talk to you about each year in the budget process is the flexible fund. When the highway user fund is distributed, first 5% is taken off the top. A portion of that is the flexible fund, and that money is all run through the county state aid account. And so in each biennial budget, I come to you and tell you how we're going to split up that 5%. Statute requires that I consult with the Association of Minnesota Counties and the League of Minnesota Cities before I come with a recommendation from the governor. And if you will look at it, the flexible fund is about $35 million in 2008 and 2009. The proposal that we have, and you can't see it on this page because it's all lumped into that $433 million amount, and so I'm telling you what is included in there. That has about $360 million, which is the direct distribution to the counties, and that's for both maintenance and construction. Then it also includes the money that goes to the town road account, which is about $20 million. It includes $11 million that goes into the town bridge account, and then the remainder is what I'm talking about with the flexible fund. And that flexible fund by statute can be split between the CASA turnbacks, our county state aid turnbacks. Those are former trunk highways that the counties have taken on. And the proposal is for 2008 and 9 that $17 million will go to that fund. Then there is a portion which are the MSAS or MSA turnbacks. Those are former trunk highways that are now belong to the cities. In fiscal 2008, that would get $6 million, and in 9, that would get $3 million. And then the remainder would go to the trunk highway fund. In 08, that's $13 million. And in 09, that's $15 million. Now, the agreement that we have with AMC and LMC is that we all agree together on this split, and we have done that. What we do is look at the list of turnback projects that we have already given back to the counties and those which we propose to do. We look at which ones we want to construct in 2008 and 9, and that agreement for when we're going to construct them is done with the counties or cities themselves. And we have a program scheduled out for through 2014, I think, of when we plan to do these projects. And so our agreement with them is that with the $17 million for the counties and the $6 million for the cities, we'll meet our agreement that we will build the projects that they want to build in 8 and 9.
Ms. Coleman, do you have a breakdown of those percentages in that top 5%? Do they vary?
The town bridge and town road are consistent. They're 30.5, I think.
How much was it? 32? Or point?
30.5, I think, is the town road account. I'd have to.
That's.
Are you saying yes? Okay. So those stay. Those are set.
Out of 5% I was talking about.
Right.
Not the,
that's out of the 5%. And this change, those percentages can change at no more often than once every 6 years. And it is you who make those changes. We don't have a proposal to change it. We are, at least the cities, counties, and us are, at this point, are satisfied with this split for this budget process.
And Ms. Coleman, the numbers, the reason you see changes in the numbers here is the fact that you're dealing with dedicated fund. It's not any new appropriations. You're actually dealing, just for the members of the committee, these numbers change up and down based on the revenue you get from your county state aid allotment from the 29%.
These numbers, when I'm saying the 17, 6, and 13, is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about in your budget summary.
Right. That's a direct appropriation, right. So that just depends on what is collected.
Right.
That's all that I propose to talk about because everything else is the same.
I have a question.
Okay.
What's the status of your local bridge account? Normally, what have you got backed up, and are you zeroed out?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we are zeroed out. We have spent the money that you gave us last year. You gave us $55 million in 2006. We have done 143 bridge projects that were actually let in 2006. We have 39 bridges that we will be letting in this next year, and they have federal matches. That's why we've set the money aside for those. And we have a waiting list now. We have 10 projects where we already have the plans in, and we have probably well over 400 bridges that we would do if we had money.
I mean, what's the amount of money that you have stacked or requests for right now?
Oh, requests for? Well.
Or that you would normally do in a year or two?
I have $86 million worth of bond requests that we would use to fund through the 2008 construction season.
What was that total? I'm sorry.
$86
million. $86
million? In requests. I don't have the plans for all of those in my office yet, but I suspect that I'll have a significant number of them before I come back to you next year in the normal bonding session. And so we will be ready to spend the money as soon as you give it to us.
Any questions from Ms. Coleman? Representative,
I would like to ask one. I was trying to find out. I know that a couple of my cities.
Representative, could you speak into the mic, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. A couple of my cities, how would I put it? You owe money to some of the cities. And they would like, I know that they would like to know when they can get the money back.
I think that's probably.
Is that under your jurisdiction?
Not on the county state. That's probably for Representative or Mr. Gray.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Skolman, whenever somebody owes money, she points to me. Whenever we're supposed to get money, she points to her. So we have this thing going on. I would suspect that that's an issue where at times the counties or cities, in this case cities you're referring to, might step up to the plate and build a project in advance of our ability to deliver it. And then we owe them the money because we repay it at a future point in time from our state road construction program. I'm speculating that that's the issue without any facts. I'm not aware that we have any outstanding or past due amounts owed anybody per se, but I think that there are various times where the cities and counties step up to the plate and to benefit their citizens or to coincide with the project that they're doing on the local road system. They'll also make the trunk highway improvement, even if we're not ready to do that or it's not planned for a later year, and then we will repay them for the trunk highway work that they did at that point in time. But usually it's a pretty specific timed response or timeline for repayment. So hopefully there isn't anybody out there that we owe money, and I'd be very interested to hear that if that's the case.
One follow-up question. If you were allowing for payment, would it... That's the reason I'm asking. I was trying to figure out where, looking at these figures, where that money would be. But it doesn't see anything about repayment in here. So how would they? What category would that come under?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would be part of our programming process of the state road construction appropriation. Okay. So it would be part and parcel of that. Okay. And we do track the debt amounts owed by municipality or county individually and track that on our balance sheet, if you will, as a debt item. But it's not a spending authority item. It's an open appropriation, essentially.
That's usually by cooperative agreement, too.
Correct.
So, any further? Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we're talking about bridges and you're saying we're zeroed out, does that mean that the bids are let for next summer? Or are we talking about this next summer that there will be no bridge repairmen?
Ms. Skolman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth, we do have a few bridges that will be let this year to be constructed in 2007 based on the old bond money, but those are ones that have federal bridge match dollars, and so that's why we had to wait until we got both the bond money and the federal money together to have the letting. But it's not a large number compared to the what we spent last year, so it's going to be a very low year of construction for bridges.
So, Mr. Chair, if we had some funding, you would be able to obviously do more. And that's something we've looked at. You know, we have a bond proposal for bridges, but maybe that's something we should look at for part of the one-time money this year, too, for the bridges, because that is a pretty tough issue.
We've used that one-time money, I think, about four, five times.
Whatever there's first, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Gorman, along that same line, is there a major, like an emergency major bridge project you consider major in that request, or is that all the small ones, what I call small?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I haven't looked at the list lately, so I couldn't tell you.
I mean, it's nothing in the counties or cities like the Sartell situation. Or
the Sauk Rapids Bridge is...
Or Sauk Rapid. That's
that may have been a request. We don't have that proposed for any more bond money on our list.
There's nothing else that you're aware of coming up in that?
Not of that size.
Mr. Chair, kind of a positive news front as well. I just wanted to highlight, and again, you don't need to turn the page, but on page 68, I just wanted to point out that the MBES amendment, the increase in funding that the counties and municipal system benefited was approximately $16 to $17 million in 8 and 9 of additional funds that they wouldn't have received had the amendment not passed. And on page 55... and page 58, I'm going to point out a couple other numbers too here, that the dedication of vehicle leasing, the sales tax on the lease vehicles, is going to mean approximately $13 million of additional funds to counties in 8 and 9 and approximately $3.5 million to our municipal state aid system in 8 and 9. So it's a significant amount because the 60% of the money that goes to roads and bridges goes to the highway user fund, and those collectively are the shares that the counties and municipalities benefit from. So the change item that's formally recognized in your budget books, it shows the portion that's on the sales tax on leased vehicles, and that's on page 55 where it says governor's recommendation dedication of vehicle leasing sales tax. So it's significant to our local road system.
Any further questions? Not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we're at the last portion of our budget is our general support and services program. This is our most modest program, but it's unique in that it's more of our administrative fabric to support departmental operations. If you turn to page 61, you'll see in the middle of the section some detail of the type of services that are provided here. I'm not going to spend much time on it because it's under 3% of our budget. So it's a very modest portion. The total biennial spending, I believe that we're looking to appropriate, is in the range of $127 million, and that includes approximately $4 million of a change request. But you'll see that this is everything from our communications, technology services, financial, our general support, shared services, and our building program, which includes a facilities maintenance program and a base funding of $4 million a year or $8 million a biennium for expansion or replacement or significant remodeling of our truck stations and district facilities. So looking on page 60, again using the numbers work page, you'll see about a third of the way down under the governor's recommendation of the $26 million that is proposed to be realigned from the state road construction program to operations and maintenance. $4 million is going to be going to this program to support primarily two things. One is the additional lease costs on our central office facility, our building across the street. Again, separately, the governor is proposing that the facade be an emergency repair for that building. Therefore, our lease costs are going to go up, and about 40% of that amount is for an increased lease cost to the Department of Administration for them absorbing the debt service on the building. As we discussed briefly, Mr. Chair, and you pointed out at the end of last session, another avenue would be for that building to be bonded through trunk highway bonds and the repairs made that way. The net effect is about the same, quite frankly. They pass on the debt service costs through our rental agreement if it's done through the Department of Administration as proposed by the governor, or it would be a debt service cost to the trunk highway fund if we were to fund it through a trunk highway bond. But the key feature is that we need to fix the building, and that's approximately I believe a $12 million repair item that would take approximately 15 to 18 months.
Mr. Gray, that's good to know. Representative Hausman doesn't happen to be here, but I know in the Capital Investment Committee, that's the decision's going to be made, and I think it's good to know that it still reflects back into trunk highway funds either way. And I believe that the request is for $11 million.
Mr. Chair, I think it's 11.8 million approximately in that range. Yep. So it's upwards of 11 million. So it's a significant repair item and a significant effort, but it's kind of been proposed a couple years now. We've got fragments of the Granite Slabs falling down, and we've got cribbing and safety features around the entire building. And the governor, that's one of the few capital building bonding items that under the emergency measure that he proposed this session. So he's only proposed emergency repairs or capital investments for this session is my understanding, and that is on that short list, that the building repair of the MnDOT building across the street.
That's good to know, because that's a discussion in the committee, and I think I'll speak to Representative Hausman, because we've got the argument. Some people say you shouldn't use trunk highway, and some say you should use cash, and some say they should use general obligation. Other than that, or general fund, whatever they all are. So that's, I'll talk to her. I'll have her talk to you about that, too.
Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate that and be available to discuss that. And I think it's a little bit of a unique feature in that the Department of Administration happens to own that building, so that's the only avenue we see that, that they have, that, that it's unique that they can propose general obligation funding for it, and it's unique that we're paying a rental, you know, fee to them. We own and operate all of our own buildings throughout the rest of the state, so it's kind of a unique building in that regard, but I appreciate that. Finally, the balance of the $4 million will go towards workforce management initiatives, investing in training and retention of our people, diversity programs, and ensuring that we have adequate human resources leadership to help us through this changing workforce environment that we're dealing with. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, that concludes our budget presentation. And I appreciate the attention and allowing us to go through in a kind of a blitzkrieg fashion. I almost said blizzardkrieg, but blitzkrieg fashion today. And we are, of course, available now for questions or are at the beck and call of the committee or any individual members if there are questions.
Any questions from the committee? Not, I suppose we'd appreciate an update in the weather. The latest.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
I see they have their technology person here. They should have brought, put it up on the screen with the road conditions
right off of their
freeway cameras.
I guess we're in the wrong room for that. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gray. We may, you know, we're always in contact, and you'll appreciate it. And for the members of the committee, I'm correct. We expect we're going to have a meeting Monday morning at 8 o'clock to move bills. We're getting into a real bind as far as some of the bills go and some of the funding bills. So we're going to have to start meetings other than regular committee time. And we've looked and we try to avoid members' conflicts and going through the whole process Abby did and with the leadership we're trying to. It looks like that's a reasonable time. Basically, Monday morning, it's a lot of referrals, but we have to get those out of the way because we have other bills that we need to hear, and we're going to be in a real bind as far as moving some of those bills along. And as you know, we're getting delayed quite often, so we want to make certain we definitely need to get some funding bills out. So probably should be aware of your emails. We do notify you. We have to notify you a couple of days ahead of time about the agenda, but be aware of what's coming up.
Mr. Chair, is that starting this coming Monday?
This coming Monday, was it right, Abby? She's got to get a new one. But today is Thursday, isn't it? Yeah, so the notice will get out 2 days ahead of time anyway. Unless there are any further questions, why? Representative Nelson, do you have one? No.
Thanks, bud.
We don't have any other announcements either. If there are no further questions, the meeting is adjourned. Till Monday morning, 8.